Thank you for listening to this podcast from TheUnheardNerd.com. If you like what you hear, please consider liking, sharing, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast feed of choice, and help us to keep creating and improving our content. Thank you.
TheUnheardNerd.com.
This is Word to the Nerd, the interview podcast from TheUnheardNerd.com. My name is Will, and joining me on this episode is the one and only Mark with a C. We'll be discussing his latest record. It's called Unicorns Get More Bacon, along with a bit of information about his backstory, his music, and the instruments he uses. Enjoy the show.
Listen up, yeah, it's a word to the nerd. Coming through the speakers from the one you never heard. A brand new show you don't want to miss, because you never heard a nerd with a style like this. Nerdcore, hip-hop, 8-bit, pop rock. It's our culture on the rise and it won't stop. Podcast drop, best day of the week, because the unheard nerd is about to speak. The unheard nerd is about to speak. The unheard nerd is about to speak.
Cases ever any questions of if I'm nice or if I'm mean? Well, the truth is I'm really a pterodactyl in a human body, cause otherwise I'd be extinct. I live on plants and vegetables and meat. I love my wife, I love my daughter, and the occasional B-movie. Yeah, I like From Justin to Kelly, and I hate American Idol. What the hell is wrong with Mark with a C?
Joining me on the show this time around is a very exciting guest. It's a person that I'm not fully familiar with his back catalogue. It's a first for me. Mostly the guests that I've had on, I know pretty much what their answers are going to be before I ask the question. This time around, that's not the case. Joining me on the show is Mark with a C. And how are you, sir? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, and I'm really flattered that you're having me on the show despite not being all that familiar with me. That's wonderful of you.
Well, that's almost an insult, but I'll explain. I am more familiar with the nerdcore hip-hop. I'm sure you are aware of this genre,
sure.
Micro-genre, if you will.
I've heard it a few times, yeah.
In fact, I think you've participated in a little bit of it here and there, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I'm also currently the general manager for Nerdy FM, which is a 24/7 online radio station dedicated to all facets of nerd music. So I'm definitely got a little more than a passing familiarity with all the genres. But yeah, I've been on a couple of nerdcore hip hop songs, but I don't know that they ever went all that wonderfully. So,
oh, I don't know. The title escapes me, but I was listening, you know, to my iPod on random recently, and you popped up on one. I can't remember which it was, but you were there, and I thought, well, that's Mark. I should.
Well, if you liked it, then it was great.
Of course, I liked it.
If you liked it, then it was good.
I started getting into your music a bit more. I mean, I say a bit more than nothing. About a year or so ago, maybe. I'm not sure. It was your Exactly Where I Am record when that came out. So that was, what, February 15?
Yeah, just about a year ago from this recording.
Yeah, so I wasn't far off. So when that came out, I knew of you. I was aware of you in you know, the nerdosphere. But I hadn't really delved into your music. And that was really the first record that I started listening to of yours. And I quite enjoy it. I've had a strange journey into this nerdcore music type thing. I used to be in a sort of punk band for many years. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with as a touring and gigging artist. You know, we had a van. There was five of us. We used to drive all over here, there, and everywhere. Get paid very little. Pay more for petrol, but enjoyed the experience immensely. But I gave all that up when I had kids. When my first daughter was born, God bless her, yeah, she needed my time more than playing in a band, and I don't regret that at all. But what it meant was that, being from a rock background pretty much throughout, I sort of gave up on guitar driven music to an extent, and I discovered nerdcore hip hop, and I immersed myself kind of fully into that, and I ignored sort of guitar music for a long time, for years actually, and it's really hit home lately that there's a lot of good sort of nerdy rock and pop acts out there that I actually need to discover, I need to get into, and you're really the first. So,
oh, thank you.
It took a long time to get there, from what sounded like an insult originally. So I don't know your music. Why am I interviewing you? Actually, you're introducing me to a whole nother side of nerd music. So how did you get into this whole nerdy... What do you do? What do you describe your music as? Nerd pop or nerd rock or...
Mostly to the average person on the street, I just say it's kind of sarcastic indie rock, because that's more of a catch-all and you don't have to do as much explaining. You know, if you press play, you can kind of hear that there's a little bit of snideness and not taking yourself too seriously while also being incredibly serious about the art at the same time, but not letting that show so much. It's definitely got its nerdy elements, but the way that I got involved in the nerd music scene was, gosh, it was just after like my fifth full-length record of original material called Normal Bias, or maybe it was around the time that I was about to release Linda Lovelace for President in 2008, but I was working at an indie record shop here in Orlando, Florida, and there were some flyers that someone had dropped off for us to post, and it was for a festival called Nerdapalooza, and the bands listed looked like a lot of fun, and I thought, well, I want to go to this show. Unfortunately, that flyer had no date or venue on it, so I had to track down the folks from Nerdapalooza just to ask when and where, like, how could I go? And it turns out that we had some mutual friends, and they knew me as the guy who sang Nerdy Girls and said, why don't you come along? And I ended up playing two sets at that first big Nerdapalooza, and I was just shocked. Everybody was there and knew my songs, and I remember after the show asking Hex, who was sort of in charge of the whole Nerdapalooza realm, well, so if I'm in, does this mean that I have to, like, change things and start putting comic book references in every song? And he's like, no, just do what you do. They like that you're genuine about yourself and you're honest, and that's why you're here. And I went, okay, so I don't have to change anything. And he went, yes. And I said, wonderful, I can do that. And that's it. They just keep calling me, and I keep showing up, and I'm thankful that they like it every time.
I had no idea that you were... was that the first ever Nerdapalooza?
I think that there was sort of a smaller one that they don't really consider the official start in 2007, though, of course, the attendees of that one would argue they took it very seriously, but as far as I know, the organizers consider 2008 to be the real first Nerdapalooza. One where they really got people from out of town to come in and entertain, where I think before it was more of a gathering for a community that knew each other through a message board. And I could be totally wrong about it, but from all the pictures and lineups that I've seen, it seemed more like a community that was gathering and performing for each other in that first one in 2007.
Well, Nerdapalooza, unfortunately, is no longer an ongoing thing, but it has been replaced by Orlando Nerdfest, hasn't it? And are you still involved with that? Do you go along to that?
Oh yeah, I performed at the last two, and the first one was really great fun. The second one was completely different, fun in its own way, but they'd given me... I wasn't allowed to swear. And I didn't really take that too seriously because I knew that MC Chris was on the bill. So I'm like, yeah, right. And but then when we got there, our stage was literally in the dinosaur room with all the play sets for children. So I literally had to watch myself, and this was really tough. Can I swear on your podcast?
Of course you can, sir. Go for it.
So I'm quite well known for a song called Motherfuckers Be Bullshitting, and people very much expect me to perform this song. And for the day, the song became Mother Huggers Be Bull Mittens. And one thing that we like to do is we'll have a callback where I sing I Wanna Dip My Balls in It, which is a reference to the television show The State, and then the audience sings it back to me. Well, at first we were going to drop it, but then we noticed that one of the sponsors of Orlando Nerdfest was an energy drink called Balls, B-A-W-L-S. So I held up the bottle and sang it, and apparently this ruffled the feathers of so many parents that there was a meeting while I was on stage of whether or not they were going to kick me off the stage, though I was merely, at that point, paying tribute to the sponsor. So it was really weird. Like, you were making the festival happy, but you were making the building of the Orlando Science Center gratuitously unhappy.
It's all a test. You talking about could be bullshitting. If you say something and by that wasn't meant for me and I'm caught reading it, you say I'm creeping it. You're the one that typed it out and didn't make it private. You know the world wide web is in everybody's den. Everybody's official position is we're safe as we've ever been. But I don't believe
it was a dicey show. Like there was always, everyone was kind of on their best behavior. And by the time MC Chris came on, like, I'm telling you, if Orlando Nerdfest had charged admission, like say they charged $1 for every time that MC Chris dropped an F-bomb, they would have raised enough money to cure cancer forever.
I've seen MC Chris once. I think he's, he came over, I think, 2004. Whenever, I don't know, early 2000s, I think, and yeah, he did swear a lot then. I don't know if he's cleaned up a little bit now, but Orlando Nerdfest and Nerdapalooza, as it was, is something of a holy grail. It's something that I really want to attend. I want to get there one day, but it's so far away. Why does that have to be so far away? I don't know. I'm born in the wrong country, but it has reminded me, I think, of what track I heard you on the other day, and was it a Torrance track?
That would make sense. Yeah, there's a long storied history behind that tune and a great misunderstanding that took place on Serial, or it's also known as A Day in the Life. And what had happened was Milk Plus had contacted me and asked me to do a hook on a song, and he'd sent me only this sort of minute and a half demo, and there was a verse where there were a lot of Serial puns, and then he said, yeah, here's where your chorus goes. Now, unfortunately, one was recovering from bronchitis, and I kept putting him off, like, listen, you really don't want me to sing right now. I'm not at my best. And secondly, I'm thinking to myself, this can't all be Serial puns. That's not what's going to happen. Another MC is going to come in, and they're going to do a verse that goes a different way. I mean, that would just make sense to you if you've only heard the one verse of the unfinished song. So I just kind of, because I was sick and I wanted to get it over with, I made up this chorus about Fruity Pebbles and sent it to him, having no idea that it was actually a Klopfen Pop song and not necessarily really a Torrance song, and it would go on to live on the Klopfen Pop album. So Klopp gets this thing handed to him, and it's all broken and, like, broken up into the stems, and he hears just this high-pitched falsetto of me with bronchitis wheezing, Fruity Pebbles! That's the first thing he hears. He immediately turns it into a meme, and he's like, what the bullshit did I get sent? And I think I was the backbone of nearly every interview he gave, where he just made fun of me till we eventually buried the hatchet. But I was like, if you didn't want something lo-fi and ridiculous that sticks out like a sore thumb, why on earth did you call Mark with a C? But secondly, there was just no communication. It was improper communication, and they ended up moving my verse to just being this epilogue on Serial. So I think it worked out for the best, because their chorus is way better than mine, but I also had no understanding of what they were actually going for.
Man, cosplay, it sounds like you really like Serial.
Fuck yeah, I do! I mean, a bowl of kicks in the booth!
Damn! You do like Serial! Hey, is that Mark with a C?
Hey, Mark with the C, what up?
Hey, guys, what's up?
Mark with the C, do you love cereal, too?
The only reason I get up at all, I have the energy to have a ball, I really do anything at all, is Fruity Pebbles. I'll never have to be a cannibal, it kinda looks like aquarium gravel. I'll eat it out the box or in a bowl, my Fruity Pebbles.
Well, that's a good song. I enjoy it. Like I say, I had my iPod on random the other day, and obviously I have Torrance, I have Klopfen Pop, I have all sorts on there. And it was kind of a surprise. I'd kind of forgotten that you were on that track, and I was like, and obviously you're in my mind recently, because we've put this off a few times, this interview. We were supposed to do it a week or two ago, and for whatever reason, we've only got around to doing it tonight. But yeah, it was in my mind. You were in my mind, and it's like, oh, there's Mark White with a C on this track. Milk Plus is a neighbour of mine. He's literally, you know, walking distance from me here. And this is what reminded me that it could have been a Torrance track that you were on. We tried to do an Indiegogo to get to Nerdapalooza with Torrance. We were going to try and get the whole Torrance crew to go to Nerdapalooza, and I was going to tag along and document the whole thing by filming, photographing, interviewing, etc., etc. A bit of a free ride for me, really. But unfortunately, we never achieved our goals, and we never made it. So that's that story.
Just make it a vacation for the family. I mean, if Nerdfest goes the way that it did last year, obviously we'll have to be clean, so you can bring the kid. Mm. I don't know what if you have a son or a daughter, or if that's too personal to ask.
Two girls, yeah.
Two girls, yeah. They would have a great time there. There's lots of stuff to play with at the Orlando Science Center, if that's where it's held again. So even if they don't like the music, fun toys. Come on, bring the whole family. Just make a vacation of it.
Win-win. Yep. Let's check my bank balance on that one. See how we do. Anyway, less about that, more about you. So you do have a new record coming out, or possibly out if people pre-order, if I understand correctly. Am I right in saying that if people pre-order the new album, they get an early copy?
Yeah, if you order it before March 8th, of 2016, you immediately get your download, and then I will ship the record to you within 2 days. And you'll get the download. You'll be the first on your block to hear it, so you don't have to do all that waiting and pacing by the mailbox. But it's also my way of really begging you to take the physical copy into account and look at it and hold it and understand that there was a whole team of people that worked on this to make it really good for you. It's not merely 12 MP3s to go on your phone. We made something that all hangs together as a piece, and this is the pre-order is basically the time where we're really hoping that, since a lot of people just want to hear it early, that they'll also have to contend with the physical copy that they will receive in the mail. Those many people are just paying for it because they want the download. They don't even really want the LP or the CD. And the LP is just this beautiful piece of pop culture. It's just pop art. And I think that Catherine from Canada, who did the art layout, and my daughter, who did the front cover, I think they really outdid themselves with it. And I'm proud of it. And it looks beautiful, and the pink and blue swirled vinyl is so delicious. It looks like a big lollipop, and you want to eat it. And I don't want that to all be lost when people are just listening to an MP3, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for physical copies. Yeah, I still like a tangible item. I like something in my hand, something I can, you know, CD I can put in the car, a record. There's something still magical about that, which I think has been lost in recent times. You know, people have become, you know, more dependent on digital downloads. It's not the first time you've done a vinyl, you know, pressing of you. I mean, you're a fan of vinyl?
Yeah, actually, vinyl for me is king, and it always has been. And it was it wasn't until around 2009 that we could afford to start doing it. I can't tell you how many vinyl releases I've done off the top of my head, but we've done the new record. We did Exactly Where I Am on a very limited vinyl run, a double live album, because all live albums must be double live. Real Live Sound of Mark with a C. We did Popular Music, which is that one really needs to be seen to be understood. You really need all the artwork to understand the premise of the record. We did Motherfuckers Be Bullshitting, some represses of Bubblegum Romance, This World Is Scary As Fuck, and Life's So Hard. Nearly all of my stuff, all of my main catalog has been out on vinyl now, except for my first record, and there's a couple in the middle that we hope to finally get a small issue out of next year. But I'll tell you, half of what I love about music is the canvas. And I look at the songs as the paint, and the object that they end up on as the type of canvas that it's being delivered to you on. And there's nothing wrong with MP3s. I use them as well. I have an iPod in the car. It's much easier than slogging around an armload of CDs in the car. But if you really like a piece of art, why wouldn't you want to have it, or to be able to look at it, or pull it out at a party and play it for friends? It's a lot cooler than dialing it up and I've loved the smell and the feel of records and the static when you first pull the wax out of the sleeve. I've been in love with all of that since I was a kid, and even if the world's turning a different way, I'm not going to give up on it. It's just what I love, and I'm going to continue to produce it no matter how unfashionable. And when I first started pressing things on vinyl, the massive resurgence hadn't happened, and people were just flat out laughing at me and making fun of me, like, why would you do this? I'm like, I don't care if you don't like it. This is just what I want to make. And now it happens to be a little more fashionable, and I don't care. It's just what I want to make.
So you have the love of vinyl, and you're issuing on vinyl. You go with the traditional compact disc. Cassettes are fairly popular again, or making a resurgence. Are you considering that as well?
We're considering, this is very new news, but I play with a live band that doesn't appear on my records because they're busy with their own projects, but they back me up from time to time live. And I'm really proud of what that band does, and we're actually considering doing a release just for cassette that I can't say much about, but we're considering it.
Okay.
it's been talked about, and it's because we've recently been asked for cassettes, and I didn't know how to go about it because I haven't figured out yet if the cassette thing is a passing fad or if this is genuine love for cassettes. And I have such a respect for all media, and I don't want to make anyone feel bad for the type of media that they want to receive to appreciate art. So I think that if you truly do love cassettes, you should have an option, and we're looking into making that a reality. It won't be overnight, but we're looking into it.
Well, I had this discussion with Michael Kill, who I imagine you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's a big fan of cassettes and has been putting out music on cassette for some time. And, yeah, it is something that's grown steadily, I think, over a few years now, and it is on the rise again, and not just in the nerdy scene, but you know, across other genres as well. But I have to remind everyone, cassettes are fucking awful. The sound quality is not great. They chew up at every possible opportunity, and I've lost a lot of heartache. I've lost a lot of great music to cassette decks and cassettes chewing up, and it's just, I don't think it's a pain we need to go through again. I think we evolved from that for a reason. Now, vinyl, I understand. You know, yes, it can break, but generally, it's fairly reliable as a music source. CDs, again, they can scratch, but generally fairly robust. Cassettes just have a fucking mind of their own.
I do feel your pain on what you're mentioning with cassettes, but I would like to say in their favor that I used to do a lot of my early records on 4-track cassettes, and there were certain tones that I could really only get by recording it to a cassette on a 4-track because there was a certain kind of compression that you got with tape saturation. And if you grew up knowing that sound, then I can't blame you for missing it. I can't say that they're wrong. It does have its own quirk, but yeah, there's everything you said is true, but it does have its qualities.
I have to say, Mark with a C, you've just really hit me in the heart, because I remember those days of recording on Tascam 4 tracks, and there is a romance to that process, and I do have fond memories of, like, that's the first time I actually made music and recorded it and could listen to it again afterwards.
I mean, remember when you first recorded a drum kit on that Tascam, and you went, man, I'm only doing this with one microphone, but I can hear everything and the cymbals aren't too bright, and how the heck did that just happen? There is some magic there, but unfortunately the function of the format isn't to die for.
It's flawed. It has its flaws. But don't we all? we've been talking about the new album. We haven't actually mentioned the title. And I'm not sure I agree with this. Unicorns Get More Bacon. Mm-hmm. Get more bacon than what?
I don't know. My daughter had to do a project for science class where she just had to spell something with the periodic table, and she liked the picture, so she brought it home and she gave it to me. And I looked at it and I said, well, that's clearly an album cover. And that was it. We just decided that would be the next record I made. And then I had to write a song to go with it, and it turned out to be pretty catchy. That's all I can say. If you have questions about the intake in proportion to other mythical creatures or non-mythical creatures, you're gonna have to ask my daughter on that one. And
God damn,
unfortunately, I can't Even if I knew, I don't think I'd give everything away by answering it.
This is definitely the toughest interview I've ever done. Every argument I have, you just throw back and hit me in the feels. And
well, some have argued that narwhals get more bacon than unicorns. And I don't know. I can't imagine that narwhals can find non-soggy bacon so that they would even have a taste for it.
Hello, it's nice to be here. I've been pacing backstage. That's actually a lie, there is no backstage. But I made up these songs, and I chose to play them here. I can only hope you like them. How am I doing so far? You see, my songs are like my kids. I have a fuck ton of them. And some are kind of good, others are just assholes. When people would sing up here, and I'm not content to do this while you look at your cell phone. They said an artist needs a patron, and unicorns get more bacon, but they cheer the loudest for what I like least. So I thought that it would be fun to get you on my side up front, and what I gotta know is, are you with me?
I had diverted all resources at the Unheard Nerd Towers to finding out whether cassettes could be a viable option for the future of music, but now I'm going to actually half that and divert the other half of the resources towards finding out, do unicorns get more bacon? And if so, what proportion do they get more of? Is it Kanye West proportions, where he's 50% more influential than anybody that's ever lived? Do unicorns get 50% more bacon than anybody else that's ever lived? It's a question I feel that needs answering, and I won't rest until...
Maybe she meant they get more bacon than you'd think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good argument. It's a good argument. If I may ask, how old is your daughter?
She's now 16.
16?
She's 16.
I'm not going to argue with a 16-year-old. There's no way I could possibly win that. So,
smart man.
I'm going to go with the, unicorns get more bacon, and don't argue with that, anybody. it is a fantastic name for a record. It's catchy, and the opening track features the lyric and is titled Unicorns Get More Bacon. And it's kind of... it feels like that's a live track. That's an opening track for a set. Am I right?
Yeah, for sure. It's every couple of records, I have a song that you just clearly know is going to open live shows for a long time to come. And I hadn't had one for the last couple of records. So I definitely had that in mind when I sat down to write it. Like, what would be really striking to kick off a show with? So you're correct. Though I don't think at the record release party we're going to kick off with it. But it will be an opening track in the future. But I have a very large catalog, and I like to keep people guessing for the live shows, and I really don't like any two shows to be alike. So maybe not. Maybe if it gets insanely popular, we'll start ending with it and really throw a monkey wrench into everyone's belief system.
As I alluded to in the review I wrote of it, I did enjoy the record immensely. And it seems like, not all the tracks, but there are certain key tracks there that you think that's a live track that's been written with the intention of playing live. Do you go into making a record with that process? Do you think, right, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this is going to be a live track, and then the rest probably going to be more album tracks. Not so much live for live performances. Is that a process? Is that part of your thinking?
It used to be, but not so much anymore. Now I mentioned, the catalog is big. I have so many songs that I can't actually please all of my listeners if they come to a show. Even if we did a very long show, I would still be boring them with certain things and leaving out some favorites that I didn't know were their favorites, you know? So now it's like, well, if the song works live, wonderful, great. But if not, I'm really not thinking about it. And I find that that's when I'm the most effective. If I'm not really thinking about the end result and I'm just writing to write, that's when I'm coming up with my best stuff. And there's tunes on this record that we're not ready to play live, actually. For example, Where's My Giant Robot, though I know people really like it, we're not ready to play live because we've struck a bargain with my daughter. She's learning to play keyboards, and I don't want to lug keyboards to the concert just to play the one song. So I thought, okay, when you perfect this song, you can bring your keyboard and you can join us and play the keyboard part to the song. So
that's a good
there's a few caveats like that, but there's other songs that you might not expect to be real barn burners live, and the one we're really excited to play that we've been brushing up is track 4 on the album called Epic Fail. It's good on the record, but man, when with the three of us play it in a room, it turned out really powerful, much more powerful than any of us previously expected it to be.
I
don't think about it. I just leave it to when the record's done, like, all right, let's try it.
I get the sense that I Hate This Song is one that's going to go pretty well live as well.
Yeah, we've got a fun plan in store for how to pull that one off. hopefully somebody's taking some video at upcoming shows so you can see, but I won't be spoiling the surprise for you myself.
You say you've got a launch party for the record. Where and when is that?
That's going to be March 5th at the Geek Easy in Orlando, Florida. And the Geek Easy is a venue that's in the back of a business called A Comic Shop. And I've got a long history, not just with that business, but the actual building that A Comic Shop is in. And it's one of my favorite places to play locally. Everybody's so happy, and they're so on the same page and kind of ready for whatever the entertainer on stage is going to bring to them. What they don't seem to enjoy is pandering. You can't get up on stage there and go, yeah, so I'm a nerd, and here's all my nerd cred. Like, people will just check the hell out on you. But if you go up and you're an individual and you just do what you do, they're going to love you. It's just a really accepting crowd. Like, yeah, one of us, if you just show up and are cool.
That's cool.
Cool by your anxiety, I guess. Maybe cool by your awkwardness.
You mentioned A Comic Shop, which is synonymous with Nerdy Show and any number of other things. We were talking just a little bit before the show about Triforce Mike, and you did a song. Is it a tribute, or is it just a song that you had anyway for him? It was a while ago. The True Story of Triforce Mike and Mark with a C.
I wouldn't say so much a tribute as merely a true story. And how this had happened was Mike had unfortunately been hit by a car, and the prognosis was not good. There was no chance he was going to make it, and people from all over the community had descended on the hospital and were just, really overwhelming staff. Of course, I knew him because we both did work for Nerdy Show. I played at Comic Shop all the time. We ran in the same circles, but we weren't terribly close. What I thought I could do is, if I just told my personal interactions with Triforce Mike, that I could quickly record it and just get it out there while everybody was mourning before he'd actually passed, and just make everyone smile. Because I can't speak for Mike, and it would be unfair for me to do that, but if I know him at all, if I knew his personality in the least, he would drop the worst joke possible while everyone's sad, just so you'd smile and laugh and go, God, that's so inappropriate. So I thought that the song really fit, and I talked to some of his very closest friends before I put it out online, and we donated all the proceeds to the MAP Foundation, which was founded in his honor.
We'll be right back.
yeah, it was just a way to get the community to sort of cheer up and remember, you know, smile and laugh about the good times that they had with or around Mike, and not so much get into the candle in the wind aspects of someone passing.
Yeah, I, you know, as I said before, for the benefit of the show, I didn't know him in any aspect at all, other than listening to, you know, Nerdy Show at times. And but it really did hit, you know, the community, I say, you know, in parentheses, the community quite hard, his passing, and it really, everybody felt it. And I think everybody got wrapped up in it to the point where, you know, it was a complete stranger to me, but I still remember every year, you know, oh, it's, you know, it's that time, yeah, where yeah, you guys and people lost a great friend. So yeah, I just thought I'd touch on that because it's only been about a month since the last anniversary of it.
Yeah, and you know, I when you tell me that you were affected by the passing over across the pond, there's no part of me that's surprised about that, though you didn't know him, because especially with Nerdy Show, he had such a big personality that you definitely walked away going, I know him. I know that guy. He felt like your best friend on the podcast. And truly, he was pretty much everyone's best friend. I knew people that couldn't handle how intense he was. He was like this ball of energy that was this cross between like Orlando's answer to Andy Dick and Keith Moon. And so some people couldn't handle that. But he, to my knowledge, didn't really dislike anybody. He was everybody's best friend if you wanted it, you know?
Sad times, but fond memories. Let's get back to the record then. Let's lighten the tone. I felt the need to mention that because, you know, it has been fairly recently the anniversary, and I'm sure people are thinking of him you know, around this time. But back to the new record. So Unicorns Get More Bacon, we've established that they do. The album is 12 tracks. It's very upbeat, as I say, a mix of songs that will work well live and others that, you know, fit much better on a recording. Would you say it's a good representation of your work as a whole, or is there anything new to this that you know, if we go back and listen to older releases, that we might find something different on?
I think the most different thing about the new record is the production and the mastering. There was more attention to detail and overall sonics on this record than ever before. I've always been the kind of guy who just sort of puts the microphone as close to the sound as he possibly can, and I record the excitement of wanting to capture the song and not really going for any production ideas, or if there's some noises in the background, I'm not trying to fight those things. I think that that's the truth. A record is a record of an event of someone making music in a room, and I've always felt that way. But this album, just the songs felt like, no, they kind of need to sound a certain way. And I couldn't really get the mastering together at the very last minute. That's a long story unto itself, one that could be left for its own interview. And I was just drowning in problems with mastering the record. And at the last moment, I reached out to Kramer, who he had discovered the band Low, who's one of my favorites, and he mastered records by Ween. He was in the Butthole Surfers, he was in Shockabilly, he's mastered records by Daniel Johnston, just a big indie rock hero of my own, and I never thought for a second he'd give me a passing glance, but he actually turned out to, he's mastered Nuclear Bubble Wraps records, so I sort of had an in when contacting him, and he made this record sound better than it ever could have. So if this is the first time you hear me, I think the songs are very indicative. There's a little bit of everything that I do on this record. But if you go backwards, you're going to go, ah, this record's really lo-fi. And sometimes you don't realize just how lo-fi those earlier records were until you put them next to this one.
Well, it definitely comes across, yeah, even for my, I'm, as I said, I'm not usually familiar with your back catalogue, but listening to the latest record, yeah, I think, again, I mentioned it in the review, you're in danger of losing your lo-fi, you know, status, because this record sounds great. It sounds really good.
Thank you. I've got some plans in the future to straddle the line. a little more than this record did. But that's just what this collection of songs called for. These songs might not have been as effective if it was just a microphone on an acoustic guitar and my voice and, you know, the fan whirring in the background. I don't know that these songs would have communicated themselves properly.
Yeah, interesting. I certainly, personally, I enjoy good production. It's not the be-all and end-all, and, you know, obviously some types of music and some recordings lend themselves better to a rougher mix or, you know, rougher recording, but yeah, I think it sounds nice and perky.
I feel like the form always has to fit the content, so I'm always thinking what serves the song best, not what do I want to do aesthetically right now, if that makes sense. I'm not going for a tone unless the song tells me, you know, what tone I need. The song is king. Without the song, you've got nothing. Without good songs, I wouldn't be here talking to you today. I wouldn't have a record to put up on. I mean, yeah, you could fill up an album with absolutely nothing, and it's been done before. If you're familiar with the mime, Marcel Marceau, he's actually got a record out called The Best of Marcel Marceau, and it has 1 minute of applause, and then the rest of side A is complete silence because he's a mime. And then you flip it over, and that's mid-show, so it's complete silence until the very last minute where there's a round of applause. So yes, you can put out a record of absolutely nothing. That is the case, but nobody's playing that on their radio show because the joke doesn't translate. The song is king. When you are dead and gone, everyone will judge you by your songs. They will judge you by the records. It doesn't matter if you are the best live act in the world. When kids hear that 50 years down the line, they're not going to reach for your live album. They're going to reach for what they hear is your most popular record. You know, how many kids do you know that have heard that the Beatles were Pandemonium live, but reach for the Beatles at the Hollywood Bowl? No, they reach for Sgt. Pepper. So the songs and the recordings are king.
So you mentioned that you have a band to play with live, but they're not the band that you record with. Who do you record with?
Just me.
It's just you. You play the drums, you play the bass, you play guitar.
Yeah, unless otherwise noted, every note that you've ever heard on a Mark with a C record is me.
Wow, that's impressive. And how long have you been a multi-instrumentalist? Is it something you've always done? Is you just picked up instruments as a kid and you had a talent, or have you had to work at it?
Oh, that's hard to answer. I wouldn't say that I got proficient at it until a few years ago, but I was doing it. I think the first time that showed up on record was around 2005 with the album This World Is Scary As Fuck, and it was because I simply didn't have a live drummer at the time, but there were certain songs that really needed a backbeat, so what I would do is I'd record the drums very slowly on the 4-track, and then I would speed it up till your brain was tricked into thinking it was a steady rhythm, and then I would record the song over it. So Stuck With Me, for example, from that album, actually began as a much slower song, and then I sped it up, and it became a really upbeat song, because that's the only way you didn't notice that the drums were fucking awful. So yeah, it just was always, if the song needed an instrument, I would have to figure out how to play that instrument. And a lot of the times on the records, you're hearing my first dalliances with those things. I just kind of work those knobs and work the instrument till I get what I need out of it. And I'm only as good of a drummer as the songs need to be. I can't, if somebody put me in front of behind a really good band, I couldn't hang with it. I'm not a great drummer. I work really hard on getting the song right for the recording. And then I don't touch my drum kit. I can say that the drummer I'm currently working with unfortunately makes this joke completely invalid, but I used to say the only thing that I hate worse than playing drums is drummers. So my current drummer is actually one of my favorite people on the planet, Jim Myers from Milk Carton Superstars, and he's one of the most dynamic and best drummers I've ever worked with. And unfortunately, he's just so wrapped up with his group that he couldn't set aside the time to, you know, focus on making another record, because he was making a record with Milk Carton Superstars. And my bass player, Emmett Dobbin, he's in like 4 other groups, and he lives in Tampa, which is about 3 hours away from where we were going to be recording. So I sort of look at this record as a template for what the band is going to be able to do with it live.
That's good. That's good. Do you have your own setup? Do you have your own recording space? Or is it you actually go to a studio and record?
No, I just do it here in my office, in my house.
That's impressive. I mean, honestly, the sound that you got on the record for a home recording. I mean, presumably you've built up your gear over the years.
Not really. I'm using pretty basic microphones and things. You know, 58s, 57s, a couple of condensers when need be, but no real great gear to speak of. And this record, I think one of the things that also sets it apart from earlier things is I used to try to let room tone be king for a lot of my sounds. I would have the microphone very far away from what I wanted to capture, and I would have the music up very loud. And this time, if it's not the drums, everything was recorded completely directly. I went directly into the sound card. The idea was that this is on or it's off. There is no in between, because I knew that at the mastering stage, the tradition right now is everybody makes the album ear bleedingly loud. So if that was what was going to happen to the record anyways, I wasn't going to give you any wiggle room to make it louder than I'd already made it. So I was going to fight the loudness wars myself with the mix that was handed to the mastering engineer.
Right.
So everything was either direct or not direct. So there was really no need for much gear.
I am blown away, actually. I'm impressed that you've got such a good and full sound. Yeah, from a home setup like that. I'm truly, actually really impressed.
Well, thank you very much. No, very few people talk to me about it, so I appreciate you asking that question, Will.
Yeah, well, you know, I have an interest in it. You know, I'm surrounded by guitars and amps here as well. But yeah, I've discussed guitars with Michael Kill. We're both fans of Gibson SGs as an electric guitar. Although I actually have an Ibanez SG copy of sorts. But you're more of an acoustic man. You play.
I'm back and forth. When I play with the live band, I play electric guitars, and my setup is a Rickenbacker 6-string, a 360, through a Vox tube amplifier, and that I just love the jangle. I love the mid range. You know, I've loved it since I heard it on Birds and Monkeys records, and I also loved it on all the REM records. To me, that's my favorite rock and roll tone. Also, it's the sound of the early Who records. I didn't know I was going to love Rickenbackers till I held one and tried it for the first time, and that was it. I just felt like I'm home. Beyond that, I've got a Fender Strat that I use for a backup, and I've got a Les Paul copy that I use, and neither of them really feel like home. They're more tools. Some songs call for electric guitars. Acoustic is where I come from, but now I'd say I'm 50-50 electric acoustic. I'm starting to get really more into what I can do with guitar, because electric guitar, you can make it, it's so much easier to make sounds with. You can just like nudge the thing and make a cool tone, where acoustic sound does not emanate until you do it properly.
it's true. It's a tougher gig to play an acoustic guitar, I think.
And I'm a big fan of happy accidents, and electric guitars especially allow for way cooler happy accidents than acoustic guitars. Acoustic guitars, you'll get those happy accidents by playing the wrong chord and then finding out that's actually the chord you really need. That's about as far as those happy accidents go. With an electric guitar, you can accidentally point the mic away from it and end up with the... For example, the classic tone on the Dire Straits song Money for Nothing was because they mic'd the cabinet incorrectly.
All right.
And since then, Mark Knopfler has pulled his hair out for years trying to figure out how to replicate that sound live. He can't do it. Yeah. He can't figure out how they did it wrong.
So a lot of bands write with acoustics and then record and perform with electric guitars. What's your writing process like? Is it a quick process? Is it, you know, intimate? Is it something you share? Is it something you do communally? Where do you find inspiration, and how do you go about writing?
Okay, so I am a firm believer in the muse. The muse visits everybody, and the muse is a promiscuous tease, because she only shows up when you're mowing the lawn. And she whispers in your ear, "Hey, I've got a really great idea for you. I think you should write a song about this. And she gives you like three verses all at once. And you're like, crap, but I'm mowing the lawn right now. I'll do it when I get inside. And if you know anything about the way the brain works, there's really no such thing as memory. There's just that moment, and then there's the decay of that moment. So you're left with the decay of what the muse gave you when you finally get inside. And then you've got to connect the dots that you can remember, kind of. And for me, the best way to do that is I often sit by myself with an acoustic guitar and just start kind of babbling until something comes out that feels like, yeah, I can add more to that. In some cases, I've just got something I want to say that day, so I'll do a verse and a chorus, and I'll quickly record it. And when it comes time to make a record, I'll go back to those bits and pieces and say, well, which of these do I actually have more to say about? There was a song that came very close to being on the record called You Do You, but it's got a really good chorus, it's got a really good verse. Ultimately, I had nothing else to say. Where Epic Fail, I thought was only going to stay a verse and a chorus, but I had tons to say, and the same for Ethics and Gaming. Ethics and Gaming was really the first two verses in the chorus, and I had to come up with more to say, and then it turns out that I couldn't shut up.
It does, yeah, again, it comes across in the record, the subject matters of the songs. It tends to be, and again, you said at the top of the show, it's like a sarcastic view of life in song form. And that you feel like real life is a big influence on what you're writing about, but you still make it kind of fantastical and whimsical in a way as well. Yeah, it does seem like I can imagine, you know, you mowing the lawn, you get an idea, or you see something from, you know, riding a bus or whatever, and it forms into a song, but with your sarcasm thrown in as well.
Yeah, I'm certainly a cynical guy. Anybody who's listened this far into this chat we're having has no doubt picked up on that. But I'm also a very positive thinker. You wouldn't know it to maybe listen to just one of my tunes, but I do believe in the good in people, and I do believe that there's good in the world, and there's a lot of possibility for positive change. And those things do show through on the record that I'm not necessarily saying that I have any answers, but there are options. For example, if we were to just all accept that, look, this is the reality, we're all really into watching others fail in public, then we'd be a lot more okay with wearing our faults on our sleeve and being able to relate to each other that way. And I find that sharing both the positive and the negative exactly as you want to say it without worrying about who gets it really means that the right people get it. But if I didn't have any hope, well, I wouldn't share this with the world, would I?
True that. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, for example, the song Anything But Plain is a really happy song. It's just about really loving looking at my wife. Mm. There's nothing cynical about that. It's pure joy. It's pure happiness. The song Make You Better was full of hope that my rabbits would get better. You know, it was all hopeful. And I hate this song. Well, that's just a joke. You know, I think it's a rather catchy song, but I always thought it would be funny to right out of the gate inform someone that you hate a song, and they're like, but I haven't even had a chance to think about it. Why do you hate this song so much?
I do think that will be a lot of fun live, and yeah, I do hope that it gets captured at some point so I can see it, because it's unlikely that I'm going to get to Orlando Nerdfest in real life. So
it's unlikely that we'll be able to play I Hate This Song at Orlando Nerdfest, to be honest with you, because of the if it's at the same place, we'll probably have to censor the heck out of it.
Well, for anyone who's like me, just getting into the nerdier side of rock and pop, rather than the hip hop, obviously they should be listening to you, but who else should we be listening to?
Well, I couldn't answer that question without telling you about my buddies just up the road, Cyfried. Mm. They do some really fantastic geek rock. There's also, if you're into the VGM stuff, locally we've got Random Encounter, who are one of the most fun video game rock bands you're ever going to see. I highly recommend that you look into Ali Gertz. Ali Gertz is currently my favorite nerdy songwriter at all, and she just recently did a dance pop EP that was all inspired by Rick and Morty, but she did another album, unfortunately named Cosby Sweater, but this was long before that controversy was in anybody's face, and it was just her voice and guitar and her singing about her loves, like Pee Wee Herman and The Simpsons, and it was so genuine and touching that you're laughing with the songs, but it genuinely moves me to tears sometimes. The double clicks are fantastic. They're sort of like the magnetic fields of nerd rock, I think. They use these sparse instruments to get really big ideas across. And from Australia, I'm really digging where Mary Amber's going. A few just off the top of my head.
I'm actually familiar with Mary Amber.
And if you like psychedelic rock, you've got to check out Nuclear Bubble Rap. They have made some truly disturbing records in the last few years, and they're calling it nerdy, and I don't know how they're getting away with it, but it will definitely chill you.
Great recommendations, and I will be looking them up. Let's just remind people then, you've got the new record out. It's called Unicorns Get More Bacon. It is available in pink and blue splatter vinyl for a mere $15 US. And it's available on compact disc as well for $8. These are pre-orders. If you pre-order them, you get a download straight away. If you're going for just a download, it's available from the 8th of March, and all of this is available from markwithac.bandcamp.com. When I was writing my review of the album, for some reason I just got stuck in my head, Mark with air conditioning, and it became a thing that I for some reason felt I had to put into that. So at some point, I think I'm going to inspire or request that people come up with a long list of what Mark has, and we'll see how that goes. So just putting that out there, that's something that's coming.
I get made fun of all the time for the stage name, and I got no problem with it because ultimately I want people to associate Mark with a C with fun. And if you're making fun of my name, that's exactly what you're doing. Long as it's not personal, I don't care. Make fun of it all you want. And, you know, you brought up Triforce Mike, and my favorite one of all time was actually Triforce Mike. And I told this story on the memorial show that Nerdy Show did right after his passing. He'd had a bit too much to drink at one of my shows, and he was vomiting outside. And I walked right past him, and I was like, hey, do you need anything? I don't remember exactly what I said. And he just looks at me and goes, I know what the C and Mark with the C stands for. And I'm like, oh, I know what he's going to say. Here it comes. So I say, what, Mike? And he goes, dick. Then vomits again. It was wonderful. It was the best joke. He had the best timing, and he was sick.
That's a great story, and a great way, I think, to wrap up this show. Where can people find you online, Mark?
I'd recommend going to markwithac.com, and you can get access to all of my records and pick up some merchandise or some downloads that you don't even have to open your wallet for if you want to do that. But also at the top of the page, there's a lot of little social media buttons. So you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. You can just stalk the living hell out of me with all those buttons. You can be really close to me at all times, though I'm keeping you at an arm's length.
We're going to finish the show with a song chosen by you from the new record. Which song shall we play out with?
Oh, that's tough.
Tough. Man, life is tough, Mark.
I brought it up so much in the show. Can we play Epic Fail?
Yes, we can indeed. That's a great
choice. Let's play Epic Fail.
Okay, Mark, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you ever so much. So the new record is out on March the 8th, and go find it at markwithac.bandcamp.com. Thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Will.
If somebody tells you that you're a dick, you might be a dick, so be prepared that some people just aren't gonna like you. If somebody tells you that your words hurt, they might be hurt, so be prepared for the chance that you're a dick or they just want attention. But how did it get this way? We're getting closer every day to the thing that we've all gotta face. We're all gonna fail in public. We've all done things we'd rather forget.
to solve it. We tried everything short of making the thought police, and we all know how that book ends. Spoiler alert, it does not end well. Well, maybe it's time we wear our faults on our sleeve and own them to be prepared. But some people are just total dicks. But how did it get this way? We're getting closer every day to the thing that we've all gotta face. We're all gonna fail in public.
Unheardnerd.com.